Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with David Andursky, president of Encon Mechanical Contractors, a family-founded firm that has grown from humble beginnings into a leading building solutions company in New Jersey. His father, Marty Andursky, founded the business in 1968, and David has carried that legacy forward. We'll dive into what it takes to lead a family business through generational change, how to stay relevant in a technology-driven industry, and how leadership, culture, and legacy intersect. David, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So David, let's get right into it. You practically grew up in the business. Talk about some of your earliest memories at Encon and maybe some moments that were really memorable for you in the early years.
You know, Ed, as a child, I was here a lot of Saturdays, a lot of nights just with my father as a typical owner's child, son. Best time to see your father was to go to work with him. During my high school years and my college breaks, I was everything from the truck driver to the service helper to the whatever part was forgotten. Hey, son, come in and bring this to this job. I'm not sure I really ever planned on being here full time until my early 20s. But I grew up here doing every ugly task imaginable that my father could ever assign to me.
That's funny. So in a family company, sometimes loyalty can mask some of the tough questions. So when did you first realize that, getting involved in the company, that how it was running business as usual needed to change? And how did you start to push towards transformation? So at some point you said, hey, I'm in your young 20s, I'm gonna get involved. I'm gonna go into the family business. And then, talk about some of those early years when you did make that commitment and some of the things that you were seeing that you said, hey, this doesn't work so well.
Well, it's in life, sometimes our best educations are through adversity. And early in my career here, we certainly had our adversities from job type, marketplace, and just some external factors that were beyond our control, that after doing this for a few years, really said to my father, Dad, we've got to change our market. If it wasn't for some of those adversities, we probably would have stayed very happily where we were. So somewhere around the turn of the century, it was, we need a new market. And we were confronted with, how do we completely rebrand who we were in the marketplace that we were in? And it was at that point around the change of the century that we just said, we got to go in a different direction. And it was not easy. Cost us changing a lot of our customer, a lot of our market, a lot of our clientele, and said, we got to find different. And it was really met with, okay, how do we do this? I was, in this point in my career, maybe in a decade. Mm-hmm. So he still owned a lot of the relationships. A lot of his relationships were starting to either retire, go into different sectors. And I said, Dad, you still know some people in the private sector. Let's just start hanging out with them and asking them how we grow differently. And that was the beginning of a monumental directional change for us.
Talk about that further. So prior to that point, how would you define Encon? What was Encon known for originally, and then where were you looking to take it? What was that shift?
We were doing, back in the 90s in the state of New Jersey, there was a lot of what was called prime public bid market, and mm-hmm. we did well in it. We figured out how to do that market, but that market after being in it for a few years, really, we learned we didn't belong there anymore. And to say, okay, we're going to go more into the negotiated design build market, which is really where my father made his roots in the 70s and 80s. And said that let's go back to that market. It's a better market. It's a friendlier market. It's where we really belong. And I think you still, and again, I said, you still have a few relationships there. Let's hang our hat there and let's rebrand and rebuild based on our relationship selling as opposed to the world of public bidding.
Yeah, different animal.
Very different in skill set, very different in market, very different in expertise that you need underneath your roof. And I said, let's rebuild it this way.
How was that met with your population? So at the time, like the personnel, like were they more or less on board with really the shift back, or was there some resistance to that shift?
No, I think they liked it better because the public market by nature is a very adversarial market. The private market is a little more relationship built. So they appreciated the different tempo of it, the different personality of it. The fact that if we did a good job for a fair market price, we'd able to earn another job as opposed to hope that we could be the lowest bidder on our next job. Relationships don't really matter in the public sector. It's just strictly a price-driven market.
So I could see clearly that why the change and how that came to be, and it seemed to work.
Again, not easy. Different adversities, but at least you have people that you're working with over time that if they value what you've done for them, they at least give you the opportunity to earn your next job.
So going back to some of the early years, in the late 60s, early 70s, your dad was putting together systems processes where few were doing that at the time. Back then, I think it was a bit more of a less a science, a bit more of an art, if you will, or a craft. But he was doing that, and he was putting down some of the foundations of processes, systems, and the like. How did that influence you as you were coming up in the business, David? Did you see that in him? Did you recognize that? And how did that shape you?
I think my father has a lot of great attributes. He's a leading edge in how to do things different or how to make things better. I say we were in the building automation control business in the 70s, long before the world knew what building automation was. And my father did it just because of his engineering background. Where my father didn't strive is how to build systems beyond his abilities. So when it became bigger than him, when my father is involved in a project or an engineering model, there's no one better. But when it came to how to multiply it or how to duplicate it is where his limitations became evident. And I became less about the technology and the engineering side and more about how to grow the systems and the people. So it's really where our two attributes together. He allowed me to take some of his archaic paper systems and digitize them. And I say in a generational business, he allowed me to call his baby ugly a little bit. Because that to this day, we have a lot of things that you can draw a direct line to what he started. I've just tried to make him better. But when it comes to if you need to go to a building and figure out why it's broken or how to make it better, there's no one better to this day. And I say, my father is 87. I still have the privilege of working with him every day. And I say to the young, smart people that we have here, just listen to him. He knows what he's doing. He may not be any, his back of the napkin stuff still works. Now, as we've had more people here, we don't always want his process to drive what we do here. So we say, I say to my father, you do it any way you want. We put a lot of smart people around him that makes his square thinking fit in our round holes. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's an interesting way of looking at it. So, this is always challenging. when there is a legacy in a business, and yours certainly has legacy. How do you think about that, David, when you think about kind of balancing, you know, that honoring of the past with working towards the future and ultimately creating your own legacy?
Really carefully. And I say I'm truly blessed that we have our annual town hall meeting every year, and I never know which one will be his last. So we always pay tribute to what he created, what his legacy is, and the fact that we still have him on stage with us. And at 87, to still have the founder of a company 56, 7 years long, you know, old, that's rare. Yeah. And the fact that my father has the passion to be here every day is tremendous. And I never want to belittle that.
Yeah.
And any change we make, you know, the culture, I'm here 32 years full time. We still have people here longer than me.
Wow.
And, you know, not many companies have the ability to say that.
No, that's
right. And true. Whenever we have new people on board, I always say, spend time with my father. He breathes and breathes the culture that we try to keep every day. And, you know, they're cool to have words on the wall, but it's really hard to promote it, especially now with 200 people here. Some of which I've never met, many of which my father certainly has never met, and they've never met my father. So when we have a company event or an annual something, I say, just say hello to him. And I encourage my father to do the same. And he may not remember you the way he once did.
Yeah.
But no one cares more about its people than he does. And that's something that we try to make sure generationally, and as we hire new people, that we hire for culture. You know, we're a very, you know, we're obviously in a very technically driven trade space. But we could teach most of the trade. I can't teach people to, you know, please, thank you, and the basics.
Yeah.
And if we have people that want to learn and are coachable, we have a lot of smart people here that are willing to give their knowledge for that, including my father.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly not just a strong mentor figure to you, but to all that would be willing to step up and say hello.
We have annual goals for ourselves every year as leaders here. And one of the goals that my father always has, or we always impose on my father, is spend more time mentoring. It'll be better for the success of me if you can impose your wisdom on some really smart 25-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, they're great engineering students, but, you know, you've forgotten more than they'll ever learn. So just...
Yeah.
You know, when you go to that meeting, on a sales meeting or a customer face, just bring them with you. And when you're driving, just talk to them.
Yeah.
And again, I never forget that, because there'll be a day that I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. And while I'm sure, and it certainly was true with, you know, being a second generation, the technology changes, you know, the technology changes at sometimes an alarming pace, but some of the root philosophy and the root knowledge doesn't change as much. And, you know, I'm guessing that probably is a lot of what your father brings, is sort of the root methodologies and the root rationale, that even though the technology looks different, the foundational issues are probably somewhere grounded in similarity.
My father is really lives by the premise of the keep it simple. And, you know, sometimes we walk into very complex problems. And inevitably, it's the simple thing that, you know, caused that problem to be created. And my father's really good at vetting what that is. And I learned a lot from him on how to do that, you know, both in and outside the business.
Awesome. So we were touching on this technology, and knowing that NCON has been fairly embracive of technology, some new services, and as we talked about before, going in some new markets and new market directions. What is... one of the harder changes or innovations that you've had to lead? And what, if any, resistance did you face in doing that? Something new that you had to bring, or you wanted to bring into the company, into the fold, from a technology or innovation standpoint?
You know, Ed, I think the biggest challenge we have, and it's probably not just faced by us, is we've got three or maybe four generations currently working for the company.
Mm.
And we are trying to do things that are more automated and AI and all the fun buzzwords and simple things like giving the technicians in the field tablets so they're not writing service work orders.
Mm.
Well, training the 28-year-old to use the tablet versus training the 63-year-old to use the tablet, it's very, very different.
Yes, it is.
And there's a lot of tools that technicians can use to make their jobs easier. Or there's new equipment out there where, much like your car, you probably can't even check the oil in your new car. Telling them, you know, the senior mechanic, hey, you're not going to treat the new piece of equipment without a laptop. You're going to plug into it, and it's going to give you the diagnostic codes of what it's doing. I don't want a laptop. I want my meter, my tools, and my... Whereas the 30-year-old saying, I don't know what tools he's talking about. I plug in my computer. And trying to manage the generational gap of technology and skill set out there is incredibly hard for the 50-year-old manager that needs to communicate to two and three and four generations. Is really, really challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. I run into it here too. I was working with a young designer. And he was working on something, and I kind of showed him the route. Kind of back then, we didn't have a computer, so we did it. It was math to figure out sizing of something. And he was kind of looking at me like, oh, wow, that's where that comes from. I'm like, yeah, that's where that comes from.
And you have some that are that really are thirsty for the wear. Yeah. And you got others that say, I'll just put that in ChatGPT. I don't need to understand why. And it's my job to understand that I no longer try to convince this person that they need to understand the why behind it.
Mm.
And some absorb it and want it, and some need it based on what their engineering, you know, role is here. And you have others that say, I'll never need to understand that. So why am I going to invest energy to figure it out?
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. So you have a lot of mantras, but one of them that I came across was failure is not an option. Talk about that for a moment. How have you instilled that mindset in your team and in your own experience? Have you ever had to live that or live up to that in a crisis situation?
Definitely. And, you know, as we talk about, you know, global supply chain issues and obsolescence of equipment, we as an industry are faced to work with equipment built in 1973, where that manufacturer has been sold four times, and you're on that roof on a 10 degree night, and the building will freeze if you don't make that machine work. You just have to figure it out. And it's where, when I say, when mechanics that are not on call, when their phone rings at 8 o'clock at night, it's usually because someone's on a roof and they need your help.
Mm.
And you might have some unique skill set that's going to make it where they can go home at night.
Mm.
So please answer the phone. Because 30 years ago, someone answered your telephone. Someone probably went to the payphone.
Major.
I think 30 years ago. And said, how do you fix this?
Yeah.
But instilling the fact that we have a responsibility to our customers to fix it.
Mm.
And sometimes we're faced with things that are beyond our skill set. You know, we started tracking the use of data of some of our guys on the phone just because it's good business.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured out that two or three mechanics were, their data consumption was 10x everybody else. Guys, what are you doing? Oh, when I'm stuck, I go to YouTube and I go to the internet, and I can fix just about anything by going to the internet. And I watch a video, and there's sure as heck someone showing you from that unit from 1976 that if you just did this, and I never would have known that. Oh, so maybe watching your data consumption isn't a bad thing. Because we had IT saying in here, saying we got to shut down how much time they're on. Well, why don't we ask why they're using so much more data than And ironically, you were able to figure out that they're the techs that could fix anything. So they all figure out their own ways to educate themselves. But in the world of how do you make yourself smarter? How do you make yourself more valuable? How do you make yourself more resourceful? Some find their own ways when it's really cold out or really hot out, and they know they have to fix it. And our mantra of you've got to get it done in the service world, and the service technician by itself, they're one man soldiers. They're lone wolves out there. They're on a roof. They don't have a team behind them. When the sun goes down, and yes, they get a call for help sometimes, but that legacy knowledge as an industry is retiring, is sunsetting. And in years to come, it will be a bigger problem.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it for sure.
We say you've got to make your Commodore 64 talk to the internet sometimes. First, you got to explain what the Commodore 64 was. And then you got to say, okay, how am I going to make this thing connect? And yeah.
And they figure it out though. I mean, to their credit, they figure it out, that's amazing. So bring it back to family. So there's a couple of family members involved in your company, right? Dave, so there's your dad, your sister. So when there are, next generation, when there are other relatives, and this comes a lot up a lot in this show. What if any boundaries do you all set to ensure that when you are talking business, things are maintained, in an objective and professional tone and tempo?
So I truly think the objectivity is something that we've always done a good job doing. I think the boundaries are the harder part. Is my father has gotten less out of ops, and we travel together, or a Thanksgiving dinner, and something comes up, or there's the emergency call that comes in, and he has an eager desire to know, and I have an eager desire not to tell. It keeps the boundaries a lot simpler.
I see.
And I'd like to think that he knows that when the world's really on fire, I'll ask him. Until then, go enjoy the grandkids. And I fight to keep the wall thick, and he fights to get it over the wall, through the wall, under the wall, by the wall, because he likes to know. Because that's how it's how it's wired. And the other thing that I learned is 87-year-olds absorb stress very, very differently. And I shelter him from the stressful parts of the normal everyday business. And inevitably, sometimes he finds out about it. Usually it's after the fire's put out. And I say, aren't you glad you didn't know? But aren't you also glad that you have a team that you could trust that can solve it for you, and you don't need to know? And sometimes customers, especially long-term customers of his, will call him directly. And I said, Dad, please don't answer the phone. We can deal with this without you. And again, it's how it's wired. It's what he loves to do. He still loves to be involved. But I think the family works better when he gets to enjoy the family time. And over the years, as I was younger in career and gray hair and no hair, it infiltrated because it had to. But I'd like to say that we've got the team in place that says that you can go enjoy Christmas Eve without worrying about where your phone is or who's going to call you up, other than just to say thank you.
That's great, and it's great that at least one of you has the discipline to say, let's keep family time as best we can.
And there are times, I think the whole family understands we are in a family business, and we're in the emergency response business. And when the phone rings and we need to, We're really good firefighters when we need to. My goal is let's not do it because we have to.
Yeah.
Stuff happens. We again, 200 people, we touch a lot of customers. We have a lot of trucks on the road in, inclement weather, and sometimes stuff happens.
Yeah.
The phone needs to ring for that. But again, let's trust the team. Let's build the team. Let's empower the team so they can make the decisions so that we can, not have to be on the clock at 2 a.m.
For sure. Yeah.
Or certainly at 87, he doesn't have to be on the clock at 2 a.m.
Yeah. It sounds like systems have a funny behavior. They don't know better than to break down in the middle of the night or on weekends or on holidays. They seem to have a mind of their own sometimes.
They inevitably, they break when it's not convenient.
Yeah.
But, as I remind our team here, you all chose to be in the emergency repair business, not me.
Yeah.
I was born into it. You weren't. So you have a choice of what your career path was. And while we're here, let's work really hard to have the systems in place so that we
Yeah.
fix it before it becomes us.
Well, it certainly sounds like your dad recognizes, you recognize this, that the greatest asset of NCON is the people, the team, and you've referenced that many times already in our discussion. So now leading this next generation of NCON, if you kind of look at leadership, what's a maybe a lesson, leadership lesson? Maybe you said, "Hey, gosh, I wish I got a handle on that when I was younger. I wish I got to that sooner." Well, it's something that you looking back and say, "Hey, I wish I knew that sooner."
How to delegate some of the things so you could do more of what you're tasked to do. And how to trust the team that's with you. And if you're building a team of, around you in any management role, and if, sometimes people wind up in the wrong, they're the right people in the wrong seat. And recognizing that and having those honest conversations of people that really want to do the right thing, but maybe they don't have the right skills to it. We look at it internally and say, we spend so much energy and resources training the field techs to do their job. Well, are we training the office people that they know how to use, in today's world, Copilot or AI or Excel? And we're saying, hey, can you put this thing in a pivot table? And they say, what's a pivot table? Okay. Well, maybe we need to be training our office team. Because maybe they've, came to us from a career where they've never dealt with that, or they don't know our ERP system, or work, our finance team's talking to them and they don't understand what a balance sheet is. Well, why don't we try to educate them before we say they're not the right person?
Yeah.
We try to go through processes through we employ operating management system called EOS. And EOS talks about, does the person get it? Do they want it? And do they have the capacity to do it? Because sometimes they're the right cultural fit, but they're on the wrong seat.
Yeah.
Or we haven't done a good job training them to do their job. And changing people, it's, inevitably we have people that want to do their job, but they don't get it. And if you
Sure.
ask them, do you understand what your job is? They'll say no. So why don't we ask them that?
Yeah.
And then if they are the right person, why don't we say, hey, we have some junior people here that are growing, that they're going to night school for accounting 101. They want to learn to be accountants here, and they want to learn to be on the finance side of the business, but they don't understand it. So, in Monmouth County, we've got Brookdale, which is a great tool. So they're going to Brookdale at night. They're taking accounting 101, and it's like, wow. Again, we have no problems sending our guys to trade schools, learn how to fix this piece of equipment, but we don't teach our people how to use the technology of the software that we use here every day. And then we say, oh, you're the wrong person. Well, we didn't train them right.
Yeah. That's a powerful insight. And it's sometimes it's a hard path, but when you got the right person who gets it, who wants it, who just needs has some gaps in their game and you fill those gaps, you know, you may be just 10x that person in terms of their performance and their ability and their passion for doing and everything else. So that's exciting when it works.
And in the world of longevity, look, you know, it's a people, employees don't stay at companies as long as they once did. We like to say that, you know, I may or may not be a really nice guy, but they're not staying here just because of me. But if we give them a path to grow, hopefully they will call this place home because we spend a lot of time here. You know, it's hard work what we do. Customers usually are calling us to tell us that we didn't do the best job or that it's broken and they need us here now, not tomorrow, not in an hour. They need us here now. So learning those skill sets and learning how that they could have a path is something we really try to do. We try to promote from within. We try to make the company sticky. We try to make it work. You know, one thing I've seen here in our growth of the company, there are people that sometimes crisscross divisions. Hey, I really want to learn to work with the computer and not with my hands so much anymore. What those guys do over there is it looks really, how do I learn to do that? I don't need to leave your company. I just need to change the division or the, you know, the office I sit in.
So something I've been thinking about as we're talking, and you referenced it, you know, sometimes somebody's out on a service call and they're tangling with a system that, you know, might be 20 or more years old, right? But then there's all of this new complexity coming into the space, new systems, and then, you know, always new codes. There's sustainability. There's integrations now with HVAC. You mentioned automation that, you know, you guys were tangling with automation back when automation wasn't even a thing. You know, it's almost staggering to think about what a service tech needs to know today. How do you keep an NCON ahead of that curve? How do you do that?
Patience. What we've tried to do is specialize the mechanic.
Okay.
Because it's become too overwhelming to have one person understand it all. Between the months of September and May, we have them in the building once a month for factory training. We invest time, money, and resources. We send people all over North America for factory training. When they come back, we have them lead a class on, you know, impose that knowledge on others. And on the, you know, on the other side of it, be available if, you know, you have a specialty piece of equipment that you're our in-house expert. When you can't be the first person on that roof or in the building to answer your phone when someone else is working on it. The answer is, if we ever stop, we're behind.
Yeah.
And we invest probably more than most people in our space. And I'm not sure we do a great job keeping up. But we try. We try all the time to do it.
Awesome. You touched on something before I wanted to circle back to and wanted to get your take from an industry standpoint and maybe even from an NCON standpoint. But it seems in the greater trades, talent, especially attracting young talent, has been a challenge. Do you see, David, do you see that changing? Do you see more young people kind of looking to the trades and saying, that's a potential path for me? Or do you still find that it's a challenge to bring young people into the fold?
So we're very involved with a lot of the local vocational schools and community colleges. Enrollment is up in the programs, which is great. It'll solve our problem in 5 or 10 years. I have a 14-year-old who's interested in the trade program, and I think it's great. You know, in my generation, everyone talked about going to college. I don't think everyone talks about it amongst his peer groups.
Okay.
And I think the stigma of a blue-collar trade in this country, I think, is starting to change. And I think it's great. You know, we have young techs that are going to make a very nice living that can't be offshored, that can't be replaced. You still need boots on the ground. And they have an opportunity to earn a very nice six-figure income with a tremendous career path in front of them.
And at a comparatively young age, I would add.
Very, yeah. And by the way, you will have to work hard. You'll probably work in not the, when it's hot out, when it's cold out, but in a way we're recession proof. And more than the money, Ed, I think there's a lot of pride in saying, I built, I fixed, I repaired. When you're the mechanic that pulls up in your truck to a building that or a homeowner who's too hot or too cold or something's broken, and you get a fix and make that person happy, there's a lot of pride to that, more than the paycheck. And I think, again, we as an industry should take a lot of value to that. And if you're the person that runs the pipe or runs the power wiring, and you can look back and say, I did that. And you can see the fruits of what your labor was in your sweat, your hands, or your creativity. It's more than a paycheck. And you can go home to your family and say, you know what? Today I walked into a building and it was freezing. It was 30 degrees and the building almost frozen. Here's what I did. And I changed this motor and I did this stuff. And now all of a sudden it's fixed and they were happy. And they said, please and thank you. And they were, what's that worth?
I mean, ultimately, it's not about hot, it's not about cold. It sounds like what it's really about is, giving a customer assurance and peace of mind that, hey, what was broken is now fixed. And maybe can't guarantee it's going to be fixed forever, but it's working really well
But for
right now.
today,
And
yeah. And you save someone's computer rack, or we do a lot of work in surgical centers and we allow the procedure to happen. And not that we're in the life, in the life-saving business, but we kind of are, because without the right temperature and humidity, the doctors
Can't
can't do their
perform.
jobs. So when we get that call at 5:45 a.m. and it's fixed by 6:10, there's a lot of value to that, that the procedure was not canceled.
For sure. So I want to touch on something else that I think we've been kind of beating around to, and it's culture, right? Culture matters. I think especially when you have a generational transition. So thinking about your tenure at NCON, David, what cultural shifts have you made kind of to reflect who the company is today, where the company is going, rather than simply saying, hey, we'll just kind of do it the way it was always done from a culture standpoint? What are some things that you've infused into the business in your time?
It's a tricky question, Ed, because my father has always valued people. I think what we've done is we've tried to level the highs and lows of the business. The gener the temperament of the 70s and 80s of yelling, screaming, and swearing aren't once what they were. Trying to value and educate as long along the way. And again, different time and place back then. But if you ask my father about his core group in the six of the 70s and 80s when he was, he'll probably still tell you about their kids' birthdays and their spouses and significance and their life's hardships. So we've just tried to make it better. I think the new generation is more valuing PTO and the world of smart technology and devices makes it really hard for our people to enjoy not being here sometimes. So I think the new culture is when, if you're a technician and you're on vacation, it's okay to shut your phone off. It's okay to enjoy your time with your family. And it's also okay for the people here to not abuse that someone's away. And we shouldn't be, if the fact that they're the only ones with the answers to that question, that organizationally we need to figure out how we could fix that. When we were eight people, it was fine. There was nobody else, but someone else should be able to fill your desk for at least a few days. And I think that's the cultural change that we're, because the next generation, they value their PTO. Now, also, let's be mindful and responsible to our desk. Let's not just leave it where no one knows what you did. You know, if you follow enough systems, someone else should be able to pick up where you left off. But let's try to value the fact that, hey, if someone, you know, especially during the COVID world and the evolution of work from home, and you know, if you're sick, be sick. If you could be at work, be at work. Be less. But it's, yeah, I think it's about being responsible to your desk and your coworkers and your peers. And if you've got something to do, you know, be mindful of it, be truthful and honest. Yeah, the world of social media, it always comes out. So
That's
if you
true.
do want to enjoy whatever it is you enjoy, hey manager, I am going to take the day off because my child got, oh, okay. But again, let's be transparent with that.
And I hear you because I think I learned pretty early in my career that I couldn't talk to people maybe the way my dad did. Because I tried once and I got some pretty immediate feedback for how that was received, and the young lady quit on the spot. And I'm like, okay, worked for my dad, not going to work for me, not going to work for this generation of people. And you know, we get both good and bad lessons, I think, sometimes when we have that previous generation to look to. You know, I realized, okay, better temper my words and be very careful.
And look, it's healthier for everybody. You know, the and you know, even to that, sometimes it takes training. You know, people are raised the way they're raised with their cultural differences, and oh, we only speak at home this way. Okay, well, you know, one of our core values is being coachable and saying we don't speak like that in here. There are other ways to communicate your frustration, because there are times, again, it's not personal. You get yelled at and you get screamed, and we, you know, we try to educate our customers. You know, I understand your frustration. However, our dispatcher's doing the best job they can. They're not going to get there any faster by yelling at them.
That's right. That's right.
So, in fact, they'll probably get you there faster if you use words like please and thank you.
Most
Because
definitely.
they understand the situation that you're in.
So, a lot of our listeners are at that crossroads, right? Do I join the family business? Do I go my own path, right? You were at that crossroads. I was at that crossroads. Thinking about all the challenges, all the expectations, all the things that you've navigated to this point, if you were to speak to a young person that was contemplating, hey, I'm thinking about joining my family's business, what piece of advice might you give them, David?
I think two big ones. One is patience. The other is, by virtue of last name, it's going to make it harder for you. You are going to have to show up earlier. You're going to have to stay later. You're going to have to work and earn the respect. None of it will be given to you because generationally you have a title or you have a last name. In fact, it will probably make it harder. And others will look at you as entitled. And if you don't earn their respect, they don't care who you are. And that was, you know, something that I think was unwritten early in my career. You know, I made sure I shut the lights off every night. There were times I had nothing to do. And I'd sit at my desk saying, when are they going to leave? Because I can't, I have to be here. And, you know, be willing to learn from people that, you know, well, there are still people here that I was their parts helper or parts runner 35 years ago. And I never take that away from them. They taught me, they educated me. And if there was nights we had to work or mornings we worked. I never played the card of, don't you know who I am? Because that does not work.
No. But I think you touched on a misconception. A lot of people, I think that a second or third gen somehow has it easy by virtue of birthplace. But truthfully, I think from all the guests that I've spoken to on the show, the expectation is higher when you've got the family name. The pressure is higher. More pressure is put on you younger. The expectations are higher, and the path you walk is harder. But when you walk it, it's worth it because you do earn that respect from peers, and and I think the journey means more because you walked the hard mile, and you did it.
You do, and as you're walking it, sometimes the journey seems, you're going uphill against the wind, barefoot in the snow, all the cliches. And some of it's true. Some of it is really, really hard to do. But second generation, let alone third generation, and the few that make it to fourth, well, I'll tell you, it's really hard.
Well said. So last question. If any of our listeners wanted to learn more about you, your story, or learn more about the work you do at NCON, what's the best way for them to connect, David?
Well, personally, I am on LinkedIn at David Andersky. The company website is www.nconmech.com. And I think we're pretty well known on the internet. And always feel free to reach out in any capacity that someone would like to. Always looking to communicate with other future leaders.
Appreciate that. David, well, thank you so much for joining us today on Growing Up B2B. Your story is certainly a compelling reminder of how leadership, culture, legacy, and innovation can all come together in a family business to build something that's special and enduring. We've been speaking with David Andersky, president of NCON Mechanical, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.